This week's episode of the New in Chess podcast features a narration from The Essential Sosonko, a collection of chess portraits and personal stories authored by chess grandmaster Gena Sosonko. The subject of this week's story is Russian grandmaster Anatoly Ludakov. Ludakov is another lesser-known name in the Essential catalog, but his story is no less interesting. A unique character on and off the board, Gena describes how, with his independent character, recklessness, and his entire manner of behavior, his sole trainer became play itself. He was a grandmaster of chess, but a grandmaster of the attack first. Enjoy this week's episode of the New in Chess podcast.
Anatoly Lutikov, 1933 to 1989. Luka. He played a number of games with Fischer and had a positive score against him. True, these were blitz games, and Bobby was only 15 years old. They met in Moscow at the Central Chess Club in the summer of 1958. The name of Fischer's opponent was Anatoly Lutikov. Fischer had just won the United States Championship, and now, together with his sister Joan, he had come to the capital of world chess. In the mornings, his sister went off to the museums, but museums were of little interest to Bobby. For days on end, he played chess. Bobby arrived at the club on Gogolevsky Boulevard when there was no one yet there apart from the porter. Gradually, the staff began to assemble, teachers, trainers, and the director himself, all of master strength. Fischer crushed them mercilessly. Vladimir Alatortsev also happened to turn up. They began ringing round the players with higher titles. Salo Flor later remembered that a telephone call raised him from his bed. "Get up, Salomon Mikhailovich. Your country needs you." Finally, they summoned the heavy artillery, Tigran Petrosian, and young, strong and trained professionals who in addition were experts at lining play, Evgeny Vasyukov and Anatoly Lutikov. It was then that this match, a memorable one for Lutikov, took place. He later recalled that they played about 30 games, of which he won roughly two-thirds. Fischer, with his childlike ingenuousness, was upset by his failure, and once, when in the heat of the battle, Lutikov resigned in a one position, he was unable to conceal his joy. A few months later, at the interzonal tournament in the Yugoslav town of Portoroz, Bobby Fischer finished among the winners and earned the right to play in the candidates' tournament. At the age of 15, he became the youngest grandmaster in the world, whereas his opponent in the Moscow Blitz match had to wait 15 long years before he received this title. Lutikov was led into chess accidentally. Leningrad, 1946, a lecture in the Palace of Culture. The topic, a new miraculous drug, penicillin. But there was some time before the lecture began, and together with a friend, the boy from the working class district went into the chess room. He was not yet 13. Lutikov saw the concentrating faces of people, moving wooden pieces on a board. For Tolya, it was all very strange. He didn't know how to play. A friend quickly began teaching him. They remembered about the lecture only when the chess room was closing. His first chess book was The Self-Tutor by Schiffers. There was little about the openings in that book, thus about the reply 1c6 to the opening move of the king's pawn. It stated briefly, irregular opening. But there was a good selection of games, several hundred of them, and all sharp, combinative battles. This book certainly influenced the young Lutikov, and in the end defined his style. Tolya Lutikov should have begun to gain a grasp of chess theory in the Leningrad Pioneer's Palace, but with his independent character, recklessness, and his entire manner of behaviour, he somehow did not fit in with the academic regime of tournaments on Tuesdays and Thursdays and theoretical lessons on Fridays. His sole trainer became play itself. He played when he wanted and where he wanted. In the Chigorin Club, in the houses of culture, in the summer in gardens and parks, tournaments and training games, the analysis of them, the study of opening variations, blindfold play, play with two moves in a row, or three, and, of course, blitz. Blitz. Classical 5-minute blitz, where the winner stays on. 3 minutes, or even a minute each for a game. Two players against two, making moves alternatively. The formula could be very varied, and always accompanied by noise and laughter, by expressions and catchphrases, in which the chess terms were so interlaced with urban folklore that a person unfamiliar with this world would simply not understand what was being said. He watched the games of the strongest Leningrad players of that time, catching their every expression, word or joke. With admiring eyes, Tolya looked at Alexander Kazimierich Tolush when the latter, opening his pack of Kazbek, lit up another cigarette and, leaning across to his opponent as he landed a tactical blow, would sympathetically ask him, "You don't mind, do you?" Or, not concerning himself with the loss of a pawn, would declare to his opponent, who in the end would find himself in a lost position, "Amen to your pies." Or simply keep up his spirits with his standard, "Forward, Kazimierich!" Many expressions used by the adult Anatoly Lutikov came from that distant Leningrad childhood. In 1949, Tolya Lutikov was one of the members of the Leningrad junior team that became national champions. What a team that was! It was headed by Korshnoi, and it included the 12-year-old first category player Borya Spassky, together with Vladimir Levdansky and Alexander Geller, who were later to become masters. The team's trainers were Vladimir Zak and Lutikov's idol, Alexander Tolush. Chess battles on long Leningrad evenings were often shared by Lutikov with the young candidate masters Vitya Korshnoi, Kolya Krogius, and Borya Vladimirov. They smoked like chimneys, there was no end to the jokes, the endless time ticked away on both faces of the chess clocks as evening imperceptibly changed into night, and all their lives still lay ahead. These evenings, these chess vigils, and finally tournament play itself, were the chess university of Anatoly Lutikov. Opening theory was something that he mainly studied directly during tournaments. He had no notebooks with secret analyses of the dragon or the subtleties of the minority attack in the Queen's Gambit. On the other hand, he carefully preserved one with the accurately recorded games of Alyakin. In 1950, in the Championship of the City, along with the well-known masters Taimanov, Furman, Klarman, Kopylov and Zukovitsky, two young players also took part, Korshnoi and the 17-year-old Lutikov, who had just become a candidate master. With his crew cut, ancient worn-out jacket and darned shirt with its protruding collar, he looked then like a worker from one of the Leningrad factories, which in fact he was. He finished last in the tournament, but he conducted several games in brilliant attacking style with sacrifices. These words were to become the label, the trademark of Lutikov throughout his chess career. 20 years later, Lutikov was playing for a grandmaster team in a tournament in Sochi. It was opposed by a team made up of promising masters. The position of the young Borya Gulko playing against Lutikov was roughly equal when, looking for winning chances, he provoked his opponent into sacrificing a piece, which in fact turned out to be very dangerous. There's no need to tempt Lutikov into sacrificing material. 20 years later, Lutikov was playing for a grandmaster team in a tournament in Sochi. It was opposed by a team made up of promising masters. The position of the young Borya Gulko playing against Lutikov was roughly equal when, looking for winning chances, he provoked his opponent into sacrificing a piece, which in fact turned out to be very dangerous. There's no need to tempt Lutikov into sacrificing material. He himself will always sacrifice something against you, remarked Korshnoi, watching the game. Lutikov himself characterized his style as follows. Attack is what I treasure most. By nature, I am a tactician. Unfettered, open chess, giving pleasure to spectators is what I have liked all my life. In my youth, I spent a long time watching Tolosh play. That was a spectacle. I regard him as one of my teachers. Chess should and is simply obliged to be attractive to spectators, and it can be if it is not deadened by excessive pragmatism. I consider a tournament to be a success, irrespective of the result, if I am able to play several combinative games. He became a master, won the Russian championship, and played in several USSR championships. Lutikov was a strong player with his own vision of the game, with an excellent feeling for the initiative, but also with deficiencies, which he simply could not overcome right to the end. An inadequate mastery of positional technique, technical errors in the endgame, and a poorly developed opening repertoire for black. As often happens with players of a tactical bent, his results with white were much better. Playing for academic equality was not to his taste, and playing to seize the initiative with black right from the opening can have serious consequences. And one more thing, he was not accustomed to working independently, but he needed a vis-a-vis, a workmate, to whom, when discussing the evaluation of a position on the board, he could briefly say, "Make a move." It cannot be said, however, that Lutikov did not study chess at all. His opening repertoire became more balanced. He stopped playing the King's Gambit, the favourite weapon of his youth, but he remained tactically inclined, if possible, right from the opening. Often he would bring out his Queen's Knight on the very first move in reply to 1e4, and it was he who introduced in the late 1960s the exotic variation 1d4 Knight f6 2c4 Knight c6, but also in the Ruy Lopez he had a leaning towards secondary variations, and thus he often employed the line 1e4 e5 2 Knight f3 Knight c6 3 Bishop b5 a6 4 Bishop A4 D6, 5 C3 F5. Early in 1978, at a tournament in Minsk, he played a dubious opening setup against a 14-year-old lad from Baku, the future winner of the tournament. Although Lutikov resisted for a long time, he was unable to avoid defeat. This game, a memorable one for Kasparov, was the first that he won against a grandmaster 1-1. As he described it in The Test of Time. "Himself will always sacrifice something against you," remarked Korshnoi, watching the game. This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, we want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl. Lutikov himself characterized his style as follows. "Attack is what I treasure most. By nature, I am a tactician. Unfettered, open chess, giving pleasure to spectators is what I have liked all my life. In my youth, I spent a long time watching Tolosh play. That was a spectacle. I regard him as one of my teachers. Chess should and is simply obliged to be attractive to spectators, and it can be if it is not deadened by excessive pragmatism. I consider a tournament to be a success, irrespective of the result, if I am able to play several combinative games." He became a master, won the Russian championship, and played in several USSR championships. Lutikov was a strong player with his own vision of the game, with an excellent feeling for the initiative, but also with deficiencies, which he simply could not overcome right to the end. An inadequate mastery of positional technique, technical errors in the endgame, and a poorly developed opening repertoire for black. As often happens with players of a tactical bent, his results with white were much better. Playing for academic equality was not to his taste, and playing to seize the initiative with black right from the opening can have serious consequences. And one more thing, he was not accustomed to working independently, but he needed a vis-a-vis, a workmate, to whom, when discussing the evaluation of a position on the board, he could briefly say, "Make a move." It cannot be said, however, that Lutikov did not study chess at all. His opening repertoire became more balanced. He stopped playing the King's Gambit, the favourite weapon of his youth, but he remained tactically inclined, if possible, right from the opening. Often he would bring out his Queen's Knight on the very first move in reply to 1e4, and it was he who introduced in the late 1960s the exotic variation 1d4 Knight f6 2c4 Knight c6, but also in the Ruy Lopez he had a leaning towards secondary variations, and thus he often employed the line 1e4 e5 2 knight f3 knight c6 3 bishop b5a6 4 bishop a4d6 5 c3 f5. Early in 1978, at a tournament in Minsk, he played a dubious opening setup against a 14-year-old lad from Baku, the future winner of the tournament. Although Lutikov resisted for a long time, he was unable to avoid defeat. This game, a memorable one for Kasparov, was the first that he won against a grandmaster 1-1, as he described it in The Test of Time. Some think that if Lutikov had studied chess diligently, learned the classics, and played solid setups, his talent would have shone even more vividly, and he would have achieved much more. I'm not sure about that. He was one of those players, normally tacticians, who play with some kind of inner animal instinct. After a brilliantly conducted attack, he would find it hard to explain why he had played thus and not otherwise. His hand itself had reached out for the right piece. Attempts to change a playing manner formed in your youth and to change your style at the expense of acquired knowledge can have only adverse consequences. The unique thing given from nature deteriorates, while you acquire that which many are able to do. It is symptomatic that chronometry, which became fashionable in the 1970s, did not work for Lutikov. Recording the time spent on thinking merely diverted him from the game. Lutikov's first international tournament brought him nothing but grief. It's true that the Moscow tournament of 1959 was very strong. First place in it was shared by Bronstein, Smyslov and Spassky. But the names of the other participants were also impressive. Olafsson, Philipp, Portisch, Larsen, Simogin, Aronin, Vasyukov. Lutikov conducted all his games in his usual reckless manner and, as in his first Leningrad championship, finished last. This was to happen to him on more than one occasion. It was the price for his all-or-nothing attitude. Lutikov did not despair and did not change his style. That same year, he won the championship of the Russian Republic, and the next year, a tournament in East Germany, in Bad Salzungen. But for the title of International Master, he had to wait another 7 years. In the tournament in the Dutch town of Beverwijk in 1967, by tradition, there were many of the world's leading players, such as Jabot, Larsen, Darga, Donner, Gligoric and Kavalik. The tournament was won by Spassky, while Lutikov took second place, only a half a point behind the winner and without losing a single game. This was his finest hour. According to Spassky, there Lutikov played with composure and with full responsibility, more than at any time in his life. Although this was a grandmaster result, the following year in Amsterdam, Lutikov played only in the master group of the IBM tournament. There were too many top-class players then in the Soviet Union, and too many were contending for a place in the grandmaster tournament. During tournaments in Holland, Lutikov could often be seen in the company of the Dutch master Dick van Geet, a player with an original style who championed the opening, which in fact became known as the van Geet opening, 1, knight c3. The unusual positions which they analysed obviously appealed to them both, and although Lutikov's German was largely limited to the terms besser and nicht gut, they understood each other perfectly well. Lutikov became an international grandmaster only at the age of 40, after sharing first place with Hort in a tournament in Leipzig in 1973. But 4 years before that, he finished third in the USSR Championship in Alma-Ata, ahead of many well-known grandmasters, for which he received the title of National Grandmaster, an achievement attained by very few. His line in chess was to some extent a continuation of Shigorin's line, who wrote, "Mr. Tarash prefers defence, but we, with our inherent weakness, aim for attack." And like Shigorin, enamoured with attack, he experienced difficulties after the initial move, 1d4. With his love of blitz, his reliance on the playing aspect of chess, with his disregard for the competitive regime, he in no way subscribed to the Botvinnik form of chess, on the coat of arms of which was engraved, "Success goes to those who are well prepared." He was a self-taught, naturally gifted player, and his line in the diversity of Soviet chess was the line of masters and grandmasters of various strengths and degrees of talent, such as Shamaev, Shiskin, Antishin, Kolmov, Chaplinsky, Vismanovin, or Arbakov. Tournaments, tournaments, tournaments. City championships and army events, team championships and championships of sports societies, Spartakiads and championships of republics, sometimes, if he was sent, international tournaments, and of course, semi-finals and finals of the USSR Championship, the strongest tournaments in the world at that time. The tournaments would last for a week, two, three, sometimes even a month, life on wheels. Cities, cities, cities. One would need a very detailed atlas of the Soviet Union in order to record all the places where Lutikov played. Solid, broad-boned, with a simple, peasant-like face and his hair combed back, that was how Lutikov looked at that time. And the bow tie, which he often wore during tournaments, merely contrasted with his entire appearance. He had a nickname, Luka. He owed it not so much to the similar sound to his surname, so much as to the hero of the frivolous poem by Barkov, which he frequently remembered and which he often recited with pleasure. Colleagues, friends, drinking companions, lengthy drinking sessions, merriment, exchanges of views and conversations, the content of which it is impossible to remember on the following murky morning. He possessed a rare constitution, and in his younger days he could calmly down a litre of vodka in an evening, or perhaps even more. In such a state, he would become heavy, and the evening could end anywhere and at any unearthly hour. An extract from the militia records of those years, "Citizen A.S. Lutikov, in a state of extreme alcoholic intoxication, was found dragging on his back another citizen, who later was found to be M.N. Tal." Once, at the closing banquet of a tournament, he made a speech to those present which began, "Ladies and Hamiltons." And at the USSR Championship in Moscow in 1969, he had a scuffle with Leonid Stein. Both had had more than a drop too much, when, at the summons of the floor attendant, the militia arrived. Stein was especially violent, attacking one of the custodians of law and order, and even tearing his shirt off him. When the militiamen finally tried to tie up Stein with a rope, Lutikov, observing the process from the side, efficiently advised the senior officer while making the appropriate gestures. "That's no way to tie him up. This is how you should do it." The militia also had to be summoned in Sverdlovsk, where Lutikov was playing in a USSR championship semi-final. One night, the floor attendant, on seeing in the hotel corridor a completely naked man, short-sightedly trying to find the door to his room, from where his card-playing friends had ejected him, decided that it was an apparition, and became frightened to death. When the militiaman arrived, he saw an idyllic scene. Lutikov, in suit and tie, trying not to breathe, sitting at the chessboard, searching for the best continuation. On another occasion, in Novosibirsk, a joker who made some caustic remarks discovered that the intellectual with spectacles also possessed considerable physical strength. These stories, which were already impressive, acquired all kinds of details, making chess folklore and creating a colourful image of Anatoly Lutikov. However, he himself stated that he kept it all under control. I always knew how much I drank the previous evening, Lutikoff asserted. Once in my youth, getting out of bed in the morning, I trod on my glasses. Since then, before going to bed, I always put my glasses under the bed, and the more I drink the previous evening, the further under the bed I put my glasses. Much was forgiven, and to much they turned a blind eye, since they knew that in the evening that same person would breathe life into the wooden pieces as only he could. Although he went abroad several times, the world beyond the Soviet Union remained for him foreign, an overseas fairy tale, and he was what he was, a citizen of the country where he was born and lived all his life. Spassky remembers how in 1967 in Moscow, Lutikoff visited him. After two or three glasses, I told a couple of anecdotes about Vasily Ivanovich Chapayev, which were then in fashion. Suddenly Tolya exerted himself. In my presence, I would ask you not to tell such stories about heroes of the Civil War. The last period of his life was a difficult one. Deficiencies, camouflaged in youth by optimism and energy, became more evident in old age. In his case, this occurred on the background of a severe, debilitating illness. The sugar content in his blood exceeded all permissible levels. He could no longer drink. His head would begin to swim after the first glass. He could no longer concentrate at the board, and his hand, which previously used to choose the required squares for his pieces, would now dispatch them into premature cavalier attacks, easily parried by his opponents. Lutikoff's attacks on the chessboard began more to resemble ventures, the victim of which he became himself. After a defeat, he was not accustomed to sitting around licking his wounds. I realised that after a defeat one should play with restraint, but all my good intentions immediately disappear when I sit down at the board, and I involuntarily remember the previous day's failure, he himself admitted. The role of the opening increased still more, and this stage of the game was not his strong side, even in his best times, and increasingly, in his words, one heard vexation about the way life had turned out badly. Besides, Lutikoff simply did not have the means to exist. This is the fate awaiting many professional chess players who are not among the elite, irrespective of the country where they live. Society does not regard chess as a profession, and all the consequences for choosing it as such are borne by the player himself. Lutikoff never received a stipend from the state. Several professions were listed in his service record: teacher, sports instructor, trainer. But effectively, for all his life, he was a chess professional. This was the only thing that he was able to do, play chess. The paradox was that, while being a chess professional, at the same time in his attitude to the game, he remained a pure amateur, especially if one regards professionalism in sport through the definition given by the Dean of Soviet Soccer, Andrei Starostin: an amateur squanders his earnings on drink while a professional deposits them in the bank. He always regarded himself as only a tournament player. When he was already past his best, he continued to hope, "The life of a chess player does not end with one tournament, however interesting. He all the time has to think about new competitions and prepare for new battles. Chess gives us competitive longevity, and I still hope to play in several big grandmaster tournaments." In search of better housing and living conditions, he journeyed thousands of kilometres across the once enormous country. Leningrad, Chelyabinsk, Novosibirsk, Tiraspol, Yaroslavl, Anapa, and again Tiraspol. These are the points where Anatoly Lutikoff halted in his nomadic life. Each time he thought that in the new place, everything would turn out right. The tournaments in which he took part became increasingly weak, just like his results in them. In hungry post-war Leningrad, a 15-year-old boy used to dream, "Give me a pan of fried potatoes and I will beat anyone." He was not destined to climb to the very top in chess, but those who were able to do this knew very well that he, Anatoly Lutikoff, was capable of winning against anyone. He became a grandmaster of chess, but in particular, a grandmaster of attack. He smashed to pieces on more than one occasion the positions of Tal and Korshnoi, and he won against great players like Keres, Bronstein, Geller, Pologievski, Taimanov, Averbakh, and Nezmetinov. Anatoly Stepanovich Lutikov died in Tiraspol in 1989.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. We thank our voice actor, Nick Murphy, our producer, Alex Pollock, and of course our sponsor, DGT, for their support, and hope to have you back soon for a new episode of the New in Chess podcast. Thank you.